Harih Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahavirayankara Vavahai Tejasvinavadhi Tamastama Vidvishavahai Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
The General Scheme of Sadhanas, page 41. The aim of metaphysical inquiring is the attainment of release through divine grace. So he's making this point is that, but it's only through divine grace that you're going to get freed from the material entanglement. So the purpose of studying the metaphysical is so that one can get freed from material entanglement, right? But by the grace of the Lord. Right? He's making that point very clear. It's always by the grace. It's not happening because you've studied or because you've done the sadhana. It's because of getting grace. Right? One naturally has to think of the means of earning it.
But you can earn it only... You can earn the grace only if you study and do the endeavor.
Yes, but it's not the studying and doing the endeavor that's getting you the release, it's the mercy of the Lord. See, because otherwise it's because I studied and because I did the sadhana, therefore I must get...
That's karma
mimamsa, yeah. So therefore that's why he's pointing this out, because now you're having to defeat that also. Because karma mimamsa people are still around. Right? They're still strong. I mean, Shankara did a lot with them. But still, your karma mimamsa is still there, your mayavadis are there, some Buddhists are still there. Not so much, you know, but it's still here and there. But it's not as much as before. So So in other words, the Lord, it's by pleasing the Lord that you'll get freed from material entanglement. But you please the Lord through proper study and proper sadhana. Right? So, does that make sense? But it's the pleasing the Lord that you're trying to get to. Mm-hmm. But he's established that you do something. Just like, let's say, you've done something wrong, so okay, how can you make your mom happy? And so then she says, okay, so you cook dinner. Okay? Right? Mm-hmm. So then, but that doesn't mean that you can go in and cook however you like, and just because you cook, therefore she has to be pleased. You know what I'm saying? You have to follow the rules, do it nicely, try to do it with the attitude of making her happy. Does that make sense? Otherwise you go in there, make a mess of everything, you know, totally devastate the kitchen, what you cook is half cooked and half burnt. Like that, you can say, I cooked. Hey, I did my job. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes? No? Yes. In other words, it's pleasing them that you're actually trying to do, and they've established how you please them. So here's the study and in practice, that is how Krishna says he'll be pleased. Right? But it's still the attitude of which, because the medium is only to express the attitude, right? Because the difference is okay, maybe, or even let's say. We do something. Let's say we do externally everything nice, okay? We go into the kitchen, we cook everything, it comes out really nice. But the whole time, we're just sitting there grumbling and we, you know, just hating the world, right? Now, the difference is unless, you know, the mother walks in regularly, then, you know, you won't catch that. But Krishna's sitting in your heart, Right? So there's no way you can kind of get around that one. So it's all about attitude with him. Just this is the sattvic medium through which you express it. Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
Is that the principle between all the secondary and primary?
Yes. The secondary is simply the recommended medium through which you express the primary. Like that. That's why there's recommended. There's the forms or the secondary and the mode of goodness, secondary mode of passion, mode of ignorance. So the goodness is what's recommended. But if you understand the principle, you can even use lower grades of facility. You know, like I said, a good cook could still cook, you know, just in an old, like, you know, tomato sauce tin or something. So, you know, give them a couple of bricks and, you know, make some fire. They can still cook, right? Because they understand the principle of cooking. That is it. That's a cook, not a Boy Scout.
The worst cook can still burn water even with tea and all that kinds.
Yes, they even would be able to do that. Their specific, unique glories would still shine through. And you're talking about a Teflon one, right? Yeah, okay. The Shastras describe them as leading to one another and in the following order. 1. Freedom from worldly attachment, vairagya. 2. Devotion to God, bhakti. 3. Study of the Shastras, shravana. 4. Reflection, manana. 5. Meditation, nididhyasana, and direct realization, sakshatkara. Okay. So here we see these last four is what the Upanishads are talking about. But now to take up the Upanishads, you have to have that worldly detachment. Right? But the point is that will get you liberation. But if you want bhakti, then you have to have bhakti there. So it's interesting how they put that here. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Madhva emphasizes the point that instruction and guidance of a competent guru and his grace, prasad, are absolutely necessary for shravanam and manana to bear fruit. Right? Because shravana, you have to be able to apply that. And then so that's the manana. So for shravana to go to the second stage of manana, that will take proper teaching, and then for manana to be practiced properly so that turns into nididhyasana. Does that make sense? Yeah.
So we accept the same thing.
Sorry?
We accept the same
thing. Yeah, yeah. So much of what is given we accept. It's only this point when they get into this difference of souls. That's where it's different. Also is that depending on the situation, if someone is talking too much about oneness, then you have to point out the difference. You know, in other words, if you talk about the devotional process and the person's a monist, and then they see that in relationship to monism rather than in relationship to the Vaishnava philosophy, then you might point out the difference very strongly. Is that something?
Can you explain the order?
It means unless there's some freedom from worldly attachment, you wouldn't be interested in elevating yourself out of the material world. Because if you're completely happy in it, then you think this is nice. So there has to be some dissatisfaction. Yes. So fortunately, dissatisfaction with your worldly arrangements is pretty common. Yes. Most have it. You know, it means just those who are so absorbed in that, it'll be okay. Because the point is they won't see the need. They won't. You can point out that there's something higher, but they think, no, but this is good.
Yes.
So it can be any range, anywhere from just understanding that, you know, the material world doesn't quite give what you expect, and to the point of where you are, you know, not involved in the material activities basically at all. Like that? Does that make sense?
Yes.
But traditionally, then what's happening is someone who's not materially involved, right, means one who has that understanding lives that lifestyle.
Yes.
Right? So therefore your brahmacharis, your vanaprasthas, and your sannyas, mm-hmm. that would be a prominent position. But the point is understanding the position in the material world is there, everybody can understand that. Because you're training that as a brahmacharya. So the idea is that you learn that early. You don't wait until you have to figure it out yourself. And then you still don't know, so you think maybe there's some other alternative for that. But you've been trained like that as a brahmacharya. So then as you go through your life, you start to see that, yes, this is true. Right, so when that is there, then there's more of the tendency to therefore be inclined towards bhakti. But fortunately, bhakti does not require detachment to work. But what we're saying here is this is sadhana. You understand? So agyata sukriti will work even if you're not detached. Because bhakti is independent. So therefore the devotee is exposing the general populace to devotional activities. It still has its effect. Right? But as that matures, then one gets faith in the devotional process. There is an element of detachment from the material world in which you are able to then have that faith. Then you're able to appreciate that this faith in the Lord is actually something of greater substance. Does that make sense? So it's not that the detachment causes it, it's bhakti causes it. Right? Because otherwise someone becomes detached and all that, and then, you know, they don't worry about things, but then they'll become attached again.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Let's say he's detached, so that's it, you know, but then he finds nothing of worth, so then he'll do crazy things he would never do before. You know? Like go climb a mountain, jump off an airplane, go do deep sea dive, something crazy. But then he finds that, you know, one, he doesn't kill himself, and then he finds that that's kind of interesting. So then he becomes attached. But now he's now considered re-inspired in materialism. Right? You know, but the point is when there's that element of detachment, that you see, that's going to be temporary. But from bhakti, it's building up, then you have something to compare it to. And then you say, this gives better, you know, gives more answers, gives more satisfaction than anything else that's ever been done. One, as we see, is that it's a problem anyway. And two, is that this gives greater satisfaction, so that faith develops. But it's from the bhakti itself. All right? Does that make sense? So then naturally, then, for it to work, is that freedom from worldly attachment has to be there. You know what I'm saying? To some degree. Right? Then the point is therefore, then you have to be committed to bhakti. Right? Because if we're not committed to the material world, where would we be committed? Therefore to the Lord. So, then we're committed to the Lord, right? So so then we study the shastras. Right? We hear and study the shastras. From that we reflect and practice. From that then we meditate on and get realization of. And then that we get the direct realization and teaching to others. Does that make sense? Because I'm not sure if it's Varaha or that. It gives these four, but in where it says, it means we're starting three is within that Upanishadic as well. So that fourth one, then they give that as teaching. Okay. You know, but we use teaching as part of the sadhana. And so with that, we're speaking, but that means we're also hearing. And there are people are asking questions that we have to present, so we're also reflecting and applying it through the speaking. Right? You understand? So even our preaching makes this process work. Even though the teaching is specifically the fourth one. It means once you've understood it, realize it, then you teach that to others.
Can we say that direct realization is like increasing devotion?
Increasing devotion? Yes, but all of them are increasing. Because you're hearing, and then you're applying it.
Yes.
Right? So each one of those means you're increasing that element. Because to hear about it, yeah, devotional service sounds nice, that's great, but it has to be some kind of increase for you to actually apply it. Mm-hmm. Is that what I'm saying?
Thank you.
A seeker is allowed to change his guru if he secures another with a superior spiritual illumination, provided the latter is able and inclined to impart the full measure of grace and illumination that may be required for the self-realization of the disciple. where both gurus happen to be of equal merit and disposition to grant the full measure of their grace, qualifying for illumination to the aspirant, the permission of the early guru shall have to be obtained before securing instruction from the other one. Right. So generally speaking, this would mean is that the guru, he doesn't have that, he doesn't, in other words, he's not a devotee. So he doesn't have that understanding. He may be, you know, Shastravit. He knows so much about Shastra. But the thing is he actually doesn't understand that bhakti is the essence. So if you have such a guru, without his permission, you can go to someone who has that understanding. You understand? But if you're dealing with two persons who can give you that, and so the first one's a guru, and you want to take further instruction from the second, then you need the permission of the first to actually take that shelter of the second. Does that make sense? So there's a difference in here. Okay. Bhakti, according to Madhvacharya, is the steady and continuous flow of deep attachment to God, transcending the love of our own selves, our friends and relations, cherished belongings, etc., and fortified by the firm conviction of the transcending majesty and greatness of God as the abode of all perfections and free from all blemish, and by an unshakable conviction of the complete metaphysical dependence of everything else upon Him. Okay, so he's bringing out is that steady and continuous flow, right? So then there would also be that element of that and that detachment from others. So that means you're talking about that it's been reduced, the material involvement's been reduced greatly. So then we could also say is here is that sadhana would be you're basically practicing or dealing as a madhyama. Like that, because before that, then it will be mixed. So we'll call that mixed devotional service. So at the Madhyama, he would call that pure devotional service. So that would be bhakti. Right? So he's just giving it at that title. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Okay. And fortified by the firm conviction of the transcending majesty and greatness of God as the abode of all perfections and free from all blemish. So that aspect is there, but it's not that's where it ends. We understand that greatness and everything else, but that's only because we think we're great. So that aspect is there to understand who actually is great. Right? You know, I mean, does your house have seven walls around it and seven gates, and each one as you go in is more opulent than the other? And like that, you know, so if no, then okay, he's got a bit more than us. So, okay. You know, our claim on God is kind of more limited, while his claim on God is not. And that's just one manifestation. Then you go to the next planet, and there he is again. In the next planet, and like that, there's unlimited planets. You know, so then, okay, even we say, yeah, no, I got, you know, like that, but you only have one. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Because who has all over? Nobody has all over, right? Because if you have one in London, you can't have seven walls around. You know, you can have an apartment, or maybe a house. You know, maybe you have a barbed wire fence, you know, or a hedge. But you can't have seven, you know, opulent like that. And by an unshakable conviction of the complete metaphysical dependence of everything else upon him. That means everything is dependent upon him. Not just even the nice things. Everything. Right? Because the tendency is, okay, all nice things are connected to God, but all the bad things, that's connected to the devil. Right? But the point is no, everything's connected to him. The bad things are just the lack of the good. Right? Because God is the superior quality, so where superior qualities aren't manifest, then that's where you get the unfortunate situation, the inauspicious. Something's inauspicious because the superior quality is not there. Right? Does that make sense? You know, kindness is there, then it works nice. But lack of kindness, so there's exploitation. So therefore, then that's where the bad takes place. Does that make sense?
Imagine in Vaishnava philosophy, there really is an illusory potency. You're like in Christian philosophy, the saint is not actually yield?
No, the point is Maya is there. She's just controlling the actions and reactions of what it goes on. She's providing the facilities, right? She's the external energy. So she's providing all the elements and putting them all together under the direction of the Lord so that you can therefore act and get the results of your actions. Right? Because why means if one sees Krishna's enjoying and I want to enjoy like that, so then what's the point in being in the material world? You want to perform an action that creates a favorable situation for you to enjoy. Right? But now in the spiritual world, that does happen. Right? Because everything is being done for Krishna's pleasure. So therefore, God enjoys. But when we take the position of God, everything in this world is not about us. Because every living entity here thinks he's God. You know? Does that make sense? So, just he likes those birds over there. Each one of them thinks they're the center, right? So then the whole thing is going on like that. But then so it's not all meant for your pleasure. You're thinking it is, but it actually isn't. That's why it doesn't work out so good.
I mean, in connection with the, you have the positive quality, and then the absence is the negative.
So yeah, but it's just like when the sun goes down, it gets dark. So darkness is only there for lack of sun. So bad qualities are there from lack of the good ones. It's not that they have their own potency.
But there is actually no lack of Krishna.
There is no lack of Krishna because in everything you can still find Krishna.
Yeah.
But still, it's the superior quality that you're finding.
Like that's say aphorism, where there's Godhead, there's light.
Yes, yes. So there's not a separate, it's not a separate reality. It's just lack of reality.
Yeah.
Right? So that's illusion. So where there's illusion and madness, that's where all the problems come up. Right? So that's all it is. It's just a lack of the proper qualities. Is that? Yeah. Taratamya, or gradational approach in the practice of bhakti, is a necessary element of the doctrine of bhakti as propounded by Madhva. The devotional homage to the gods and the sages in spiritual hierarchy is not a matter of courtesy. It is a must. The devas occupy a special position in the government of God's universe with special cosmic jurisdiction delegated to them. They are the greatest devotees of the Lord, the highest order of jnana yogis, and are direct superiors, protectors, guides, and gurus. We cannot even think of God without their grace. It is they who inspire our minds along the right lines and turn them Godward and enable us to know and worship him by their presiding activity over the sense organs, mind, buddhi, etc., and bring our sadhanas to fruition. You understand? So in other words, we're looking at the point as if you please God, you don't have to worry about any of the others, because if they're representing the Lord, you don't have to... like that. But they're pointing out, no, is that you have to understand all these things. So therefore, it's part of their practice, that respect of the devas and all the superiors and everything like that. Because you're dealing with the Lord as the supreme authority. So therefore, that principle of authority is very important or prominent. While for us, the element of Krishna's supreme authority is to simply get us from trying to stop being the supreme authority. Right, but the element of he's the center of attention, that's going to be the same. It's just for us, it's not through as much the hierarchy as it is through like that. But at the same time, is then you have the parampara. So we'll put the that hierarchy element in place in the parampara, right? Instead of in the element of majesty, because in Vaikuntha it's a kshatriya culture. Right, so there's management because there's guards there and everything like that. So, but guards there is a matter of the majesty of it, Right? It's not that a rasa dancer is not guards. But, you know, it's not they're sitting around with clubs and this and that. They don't bother with that. You know, it's like, Kamsa came to Vrindavan, right? He came down, you know, that Mathura road when they do the park round. Then there's that point where you turn to go back around, but you can go straight and it goes to Mathura. So he came down that road. And just inside from where you turn, just in a little bit. It's not much. There's a little bit of a hill there. You know, it's just a slight hill. It goes down into a kund there. So Yogamaya and some of the gopis were there. So he comes in his chariot, you know, something about where's Krishna and this and that. So Yogamaya just, you know, catches him, turns him into a gopi and says, wash pots. Wash pots out there. So he's there, he's suffering like anything, go get this, go get that. You know, they really worked him hard. Right, you know? And at the end of the day, he said, please, please, what can I do? He says, okay, we'll let you go, but he says, you can never come here again. He says, you come here again, we'll do the same thing. You know, okay. So he just, they turned it back in, he got on his chariot, left, never came back again. So they don't have to worry about all these clubs. You know, it's just that they're the potency. They are the Shakti. So they just, you know, bang, okay. And that's just, you know, being nice. They could have turned them into a frog or something, you know, like that. But they're more nice, so they don't bother with frogs. And who wants to kiss a frog, right? Yeah.
All right, so in what way they respect the demigods? Do they have some rituals? Or?
That I'm not sure. I think there's, because that's the difference. It's like Ramanujas and that, they don't even bother with the demigods. It's just as if they don't exist. Because the point of Vishnu's there, they're automatically taken care of. So from that angle, not from the neophyte, you know, we can't appreciate. It's just that there's no need like that. Because all the demigods, in their original forms, are all the associates of the Lord. So they're always worshiping the Lord with his associates. Does that make sense? Like Vishwakshena is always there. But the point is Vishwakshena, then coming here, he's the Lord of the Vaikuntha army, the general. But here, then you have, and he's the one that removes all the obstacles in Vaikuntha, right? Because you have an army. You're going to take care of everything. Right? But here, then you see that potency goes into Ganesh and goes into Skanda. Skanda?
Skanda.
Yeah, Skanda. You know, one of Shiva's sons?
Yes.
Like that. Kartikeya.
Yeah.
Like that. So, you don't have to worry about Ganesh and Kartikeya because you're already worshiping Vishwakshena. Because Vishwakshena, Garuda, Lakshmi, they're always with the Lord. So everything comes out of them. You know, the external potency is there with what do you call it? Lakshmi. Ananta, you know, comes as you know, Sesha. He's the one, Sankarshan, who comes as Shiva. So you don't have to bother with any of the demigods. He's simply the Lord and his associates, and everybody's covered. But they're going through this thing of Taratamya step by step. Right? So that means I'm starting off here and understanding that's there, but I have to respect those here to get that practice of doing it. Well, we just practice on the associates and the guru and the Vaishnavas. Well, there they're going through the whole hierarchy. You know, so it's a pancharatric system. But just he emphasizes that, but the other acharyas don't.
Can we say he did that because of Ramanuja didn't?
Not necessarily.
So it's not like...
It's not... See, he's not the one directly opposed. I don't think he's the one that has a problem.
Ramanuja?
No, Madhva doesn't have a problem with them. It's the followers who somehow or another have taken on that move. You know, it's just, it's natural, you know. So, but it's natural amongst kind of the immature mentality to do that. But once it's pointed out, then one should be more careful. But it doesn't mean that, you know, it means in other words, if someone's doing something that's bona fide, don't worry about it. But it doesn't mean we have to do it. You know, but this would work, you know, for that situation. There'd be a reason for preaching this at that time. Because Lord Chaitanya gave him the philosophy. So in other words, it's an aspect of the philosophy. It's just very strongly emphasizing to completely eradicate the overemphasized concept of one. So it's actually in opposition to Shankara, not Ramanuja. like that. That's why it's a problem we're going to have to see here when it comes out on the next page, Dvaita versus Vishishta Dvaita, you know, on whether it's something that we even bother reading or not. Just like the introduction we didn't read, because that was put together, I think, by Mudred, so of course it's going to...
This point of the demigods, could it be also connected to the point of the truth? Because then do you have a difference between you and the demigods and God?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the principle is the same of respecting God's authority. So now the demigods are in that God's authority, and they're devotees. Right? And they're in a more powerful position. It's through their grace you're able to do your service, because you're doing your service by, let's say, using your hands. But the demigods are in control of your hands. You know, you can see. The demigods are in control of the sight. They're in control of the sun, with which everything's there. All the things you're using out of, the demigods are in control of that. You know what I'm saying? So, in that way, then you're respecting that aspect. What it does is that everything you're dealing with, you see it connected back to the demigods and then back to Krishna. So that means everything you deal with, you're connecting to the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? So, you know, in that way, you're looking at the arms of the universal form. Like that. Well, we're basically taking the whole universal form at once, not just focusing specifically on the arms. Right? Does that make sense? So that would be the difference. But the point is, the Lord is complete. So even if you just take the arms, it still works out the same process. You still are back to the Lord. Okay. Does that make sense? From Madhva's Gita Tatparya, pleased with the initial bhakti of the jivas, the Lord bestows on them firm knowledge of his nature and attributes. Right? So then that means that shraddha. And after he then reveals himself. Right, so now this thing is bestows on the knowledge of his nature and attributes and reveals himself. Now what we're discussing, you know, the Jiva Dharma, then that means that's the potency of Bhava. Because Bhava is the potency through which the Lord is known and revealed. Does that make sense? So when we say Krishna does it, but he does it through his energies. Right? But that's Krishna doing it. With that, because he and his energies are non-different. So it's just pointing out that element is that same point. Therefore, he inspires them with still more intensive devotion. And after showing himself to the bhaktas, he cuts the knot of their prakritic bondage. Prakritic bondage. In the released state also, the jivas remain under the Lord's control, imbued with unalloyed devotion to him. Right, so then after they so that's within, so he initial, then he reveals to them like that, right? And then he cuts that bondage of knowledge, I mean bondage of the material world, excuse me. Then it brings them to the liberated platform. And then within that, then they remain under that unalloyed devotion. So they remain still under the internal potency. Right? So instead they're freed from the external potency, and now they function under the internal potency. Yes. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. It is said that Madhvacharya was the first Vaishnava philosopher who categorically held that the goddess Sri, who holds the unique position of being Nitya Mukta and Samana having semi-parity with the Lord, remains the most ardent devotee of the Lord from eternity. He also refers to the existence of Ekanta Bhaktas, who prefer to be bhaktas instead of Sayuja Muktas.
It was before.
Means it was there before. That's what I'm saying is, I think the those kind of things, because it is said, so he's taking that from the Madhvas themselves. See, because in the Ramanujas, like that, they somehow or another, because you have the problem of not being able to appreciate what the Acharya is saying. So then they have split into two groups. Yeah, the Watagalai and Tengalai, which means the northern group and the southern group. Like you see the Tilak, one is the square Tilak, one's the round Tilak. Like that. So one of them takes that Lakshmi is Jiva, which means that she is the servant. And the other takes it that she's non-different from the Lord, though she's the energy. Right? Does that make sense? So we don't see a contradiction to that. Right? I mean, she is not different from the Lord, but she's devotee.
She's not jiva.
No, but they're taking jiva meaning servant.
Oh, okay.
Like that. But some will take jiva means like us. She's the biggest one of us. Or she's the origin of us. So you get all these funny things coming from a simple statement of the Acharyas. Now, here the saying is that the unique position of Nityamukta and Samana, having semi-partiality of the Lord, remains the most ardent devotee. So, but Ramanuja also said that. It's just that they'll use different terminologies or stuff because of the words, people will think it's different. You know, like the other day I said, Achidra Dharana, Achidra Vachana, and then, so, oh, you mean, you know, some this. They use the other Sanskrit term. You know, like I say, yeah, we can go in my automobile. You mean in your car? You know, like that. You understand? So it comes out like that.
Mm-hmm. So when you say Shri Sampradaya, it is Ramanuja Sampradaya?
Ramanuja. Means, well, Shri means it's the Sampradaya coming down from Shri, from Lakshmi. Right? In other words, Krishna spoke to Brahma, that starts the Brahma Sampradaya. He spoke to Shiva, that starts the Rudra. He spoke to the four Kumaras, that starts their line. And he spoke to Lakshmi, that starts that line. Mm-hmm. Right? It means in the Bhagavatam, it talks about where the Lord is talking to the four Kumaras.
Yes.
Right? There's that pastime. Yes. Right? So that is the beginning of the
Sampradaya.
That Sampradaya. Because then they have their disciples, they have theirs. So these are four bona fide lines. Now, in that those four lines, then in the Kali Yuga, you have the founder Acharya. So Ramanuja is the founder Acharya in the Sri line. Mm-hmm. Right? So those in the Sri line that are practicing that, they're following Ramanuja, they're as practicing with Ramanuja as the founder.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Like that. So that's what's going on. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Is Baba the
Shakti of Bhakti Devi? Or is it directly from Krishna? Because Bhava is the bud of Prema.
Yeah.
So all it is in the bud form, it's taking care of all this thing. Prema doesn't need to take care of it. You understand? Just like the demons in this world, Krishna doesn't need to kill them. Maya takes care of them. But even the big demons, like Hiranyakashipu, Maya can easily take care of them. Right? But Krishna comes himself personally just to attract the devotees. You know, it's like when the demigods couldn't, all the demigods together couldn't defeat this one demon. Right? Then Maya herself, she went out and did it. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, he doesn't have to kill any demon, but he does just for, you know, for the pastime. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So the point is prema doesn't have to, prema isn't dealing with the all these elements of preliminary practices. But prema, the bud of prema is rati. Right? So that rati, that's what's taking care of everything else. You know, just like we're saying, the Nama Bas will give you liberation. Right? Shuddha Nam doesn't, no one's worried about liberation.
Mm-hmm.
So we're saying that kind of lesser element, though it's still part of it, or that not fully manifestation of it, is already taking care of liberating souls from the material world and bringing them to the point of prema. Does that make sense? So we're looking at it in relationship to prema. That's the element. Okay. He also refers to the existence of Ekanta Bhaktas who prefer the Bhaktas to be Bhaktas instead of Sayuja Muktas. Like that. We see that in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita where you have those devotees that they stay with Lord Shiva and the Brahman. Right? So they're devotees. But they're the element of that liberated position is their situation. But they identify as devotees, not just as a you know, nitya muktas. Right? So they're not, they don't want to merge. Anybody? But he refers to those, but we already know about them. You understand? So there's nothing that any of the four acharyas will say that's unique. They'll say, oh, because there's like a, what's his name? Nimbarka. So he's talking about Radha Krishna worship and spontaneous devotional service. Vrindavan, none of the other acharyas talk about that. So you can say, well, that's his unique. But the point is all these are uniquenesses that are all found in the Chintaveda Veda Tattva. Right? So when we say it's unique, maybe others didn't bring that out so much. But it doesn't mean that it's not there in the main philosophy. It's not that, oh, that's their philosophy. No, that's all part of our philosophy. Does that make sense? And so if there's something that's unique about them that isn't in our philosophy, that means somebody didn't understand what the acharya said. You know, that thing of gradation of souls, that they're sattvic, tamasic, and rajasic by nature. Right? So that means they didn't understand. Like that. The followers. The acharya knows what's going on. But sometimes these things are left just because then that kind of person who wasn't absorbed in this could get absorbed in that. Does that make sense?
You mentioned that the four founder acharyas in Kali Yuga, and then there's Lord Chaitanya, who is kind of the fifth sampradaya, and then there's Srila Prabhupada.
Yeah.
They're all founder acharyas for the Kali.
No, but Lord Chaitanya is Krishna.
So he's not considered this.
The founder acharya, though.
And then Srila Prabhupada?
He's the founder acharya.
Wow.
But sometimes then they'll take it as they'll get into arguments. No, but it has to be the senior most person. But Yamunacharya is one of the 12 Alwars, right? But Yamunacharya is two generations up from Ramanuja. So why wouldn't he be the founder? The founder is the one who takes those teachings of the Acharyas and puts it into such a form and presentation and practice that everybody in that particular age can take it and use it. Understand? That's the founder acharya. Not that he's senior to someone else. No, but then Rupa Goswami is the founder. No. The founder acharya bases it on his teachings on the previous acharyas. So therefore he's taking all the points that they made. But the point is if we just hand, you know, go out on the street and hand somebody a Prem Bhakti Chandrika and say, here, go for it. What's going to happen? You know, or give out the Satsundarbans or Vedanta Sutra commentary at Baladev. You know, or say, okay, Gorkhashardas Babaji Maharaj had nothing, lived in a toilet and chanted japa all day. So, you know, therefore when you go visit our establishment, you know, down there at a prestigious place on, you know, Fifth Avenue, you walk in and all it is toilets. Private little toilets. I mean, they're not, you know, common toilets, you know, they're private toilets. You know. And everybody's in a toilet. You understand? So that's the thing, is they take what is the element that each one is bringing out and making unique, and they put that all together into something that's practically usable and relatable by that common person at that time. That's the founder. So that means after him, everybody is trying to make people understand the teachings of the founder.
Then Srila Prabhupada stands on its own.
Sorry?
And then Srila Prabhupada stands on its own because he's not in exactly Madhava line then.
We're in the Madhava line. But we're the Gaudiyas.
So
we have to come in one of the four lines because there's four lines.
So we have Gaudiyas, and then he is the founder of Acharya for us.
Yes.
But not only for ISKCON. It shouldn't be that.
It's specifically for, it means the practitioners identify as that, but it's not limited to the particular institution.
So what I'm pointing at, that when some other people from other kind of also Gaudiya, when they use Srila Prabhupada books, it's actually bona fide, and for their, as long as they don't interpret.
Yeah, it means you don't take it out of context. I think it was one time, I'm not sure what it was, Siddha Sarup or somebody. It was one, you know, yoga group. And they were, you know, buying Prabhupada's books. They were getting mridangas and kartals, doing kirtan all day, reading Prabhupada's books. And but they weren't in the temples. They were on their own. And they went to Prabhupada and complained. You know, what's this? You know, they bought $300 worth of books. Like in those days, that's a lot. You know, it's probably, you know, it's like, I'm not sure what it would have been a month to rent the whole temple, but it wasn't, you know, that's probably, you know, 6 months of rent, you know, or more, you know, like that. So that, yeah, I mean, I remember our house was $60 a month, you know, and that was, and we were in a nice neighborhood. So, you know, generally temples happen to be not in nice neighborhoods, you know, so, you know, it's pretty cheap. So then they're saying, you know, they bought all these books, they're reading the books and all that, and they're doing, they bought Madhunga's cards, all the kirtan, and, you know, chanting Hare Krishna. And Prabhupada says, so you're saying that they bought my books, they're reading my books. Yes, Srila Prabhupada. And they bought Madhunga's cartels and they're doing Hare Krishna kirtan all day. He says, yes, Srila Prabhupada, you know. And Prabhupada says, what's the problem? Like that. And the devotees are, yeah, right. Yeah, okay. You know. So the point is that Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that all the other sampradayas will be able to find their conclusions in our sampradaya. So in other words, all little tricky points that they may be having problem with, they'll be able to understand it through reading our line. As it is, the other lines read our acharya's works. And they also read Prabhupada's books. But just, they don't talk about it, but they do. If you go and visit them, they've read it. You know, and these are the scholars, so how many of them are there at now, I don't know. But back in the 80s, there were so many.
Maharaj, founder Acharya is somebody who is empowered by Krishna.
Yes, yeah, basically. Yeah.
It's not ordinary.
Yeah, well, that's what the meaning of Shakti Vesh.
Who founder Acharya are Shakti Vesh?
It means the thing is these kind of things aren't as important. Means, but in this case, of course, it means they're empowered with that potency of bhakti to be able to preach it, right? It's, you know, the point mentions is anybody who can preach, it's because of the grace of the Lord. I think Lord Chaitanya makes that point. You know, so someone can preach because they're getting the Lord's mercy. So just they're getting, you know, so that would mean that, but. You know what I'm saying? But it's not that you're trying to categorize, because that's the problem. Then that creates this whole personality cult. Mm-hmm. But the point is we're all about personality, and we're all about a culture of Krishna consciousness. But we want to avoid the personality cult, that it's the personality that's the important thing, as opposed to the teachings and the practice that they're recommending. Does that make sense? So one always wants to be very careful about that step. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, Jayatirtha refers to three stages of bhakti in the ascending order. Okay. One, pakva bhakti, or ripe devotion. The means to acquiring knowledge of God, Shravana and Manana. Manana just paved the way for it. Paripakva bhakti, or riper devotion, the means of direct vision of the Lord. Jnana is the means. And ati paripakva bhakti, or mellow devotion, the spiritual joy of communion with the Lord. Here the direct realization of the Lord, aparoksha jnana, is achieved and the bhakta wins the absolute grace, atyarta prasad. Okay? So here the interesting point is he considers that you've taken up the devotional service, that's ripe devotion. Yes. Right? So that would be, so Shravanam Kirtanam is, Shravanam and Manana is your process. You know, Shravanam means Kirtanam, but Manana means you're contemplating. Right? Then Paripaktva, a riper, means the direct vision of the Lord as the means. And then, okay, yeah, spiritual joy here, realization of the Lord. Okay, so then depending on how you put this, then you could take is that the first one means your madhyama, your second one means the beginning stages of your bhava, and the third one means the latter stages of bhava that matures into prema. You know, it means the latter stage is the aparoksha jnana, and the atyarta prashada is the prema.
So they start from madhyama.
Yes.
I mean, that's what you said before when he said, say, when he defined bhakti. Bhakti is steady and continuous flow of deep attachment to God. So that would be the nishta. So that would mean that, in other words, they're saying pakva or pukka. You know, it means it's ripe. So that means that the neophyte means it's unripe devotion. You know? But it's still devotion, but it's unripe. So when you get to the madhyama stage, then it's ripe. You know, so it's ripe, then there's more ripe, then there's most ripe.
Maybe people are more qualified then.
No, it's just, it means, generally speaking, you would see people would take it up and get very involved very quickly. But you do still have that kind of element there. You do still have that element. Like that. Does that make sense? You still will have that aspect. Because bhakti is bhakti, no matter what. That makes sense? Yeah? You know, so they're all discussing the same thing. It's just a matter of where they put their emphasis and that. Just like what we're saying, Vishwanath, you know, makes the point that prema is bhakti. Right? Because here he's talking out that he's talking these lower levels. But Vishwanath makes the point, prema is bhakti. Everything below that is practice. Right? So below that is bhav sadhana. And then below that is sadhana bhakti, right? While Baladev then puts it, anything in connection with bhakti or its intention is prema, then it's counted as bhakti. Does that make sense? So that brings it right down to whatever position we're at. So then Madhva is just, you know, taking a very, you know, kind of like a firm position. So it'll be very serious. The practitioner is very serious. They're serious sadhakas. Does that make sense? It formalizes the environment, so it's taken more seriously. Does that make sense? So it just take whatever will work for the particular time. So since at that time there people were very much into the scholarly element and everything like that, so then it'll work very nicely.
Alright, so he's taking the same perspective as Baladeva Vidyabhushan. He's considering
from it basically, but it's touch a step up from there.
Okay.
It's not as soft in the way or as that, because in other words, there is the element if you're very open and soft, then sometimes it's taken for granted. So you want to close it just a touch enough that they become serious. Does that make sense? It's just like, let's say, you have a music class in high school, right? But then you have a high school that it's only for musicians. Only if you can play an instrument, you can get into it. You understand? So the mood of music is more formal, right? Well, in the high school, it is one of the, you know, so that's the thing, is you just have to be careful as where you put it, where it will accommodate the people. Because if you make it too broad, then they may think, oh, it's not so serious. But if you make it too serious, then, oh, it's not accessible. So you have to find that point where it's serious and accessible. Does that make sense? You know? Does that make sense? Because if you tell a madhyama that bhakti starts at prema, he doesn't have a problem. If you tell them a neophyte that bhakti starts at prema, then it's like, kind of like, oh, well, then what's my chances? Does that make sense?
And just like Maharaj, you mentioned earlier about bhava being the potency present all the way through.
Yes.
And does the neophyte devotee then experience small amounts of love for Krishna?
Yes, but it says it's like, you know, what is it? Nominal portion of the shadow. You know, in other words, you have the shadows there, and then you're going over and taking a little spot on that. But the point is it's real. Right? The material world is illusory. So how much can you get out of an illusion?
Nothing.
You know what I'm saying? That's the thing. You get something. You know, if you put on the video something exciting, you know, the guy, you know, guy jumps out of the airplane, he takes a camera with him and all that, you know, and is shooting all that. Then you see that, it'll have some excitement element, but it's still not going to in no way compare to, you know, doing it yourself. You might prefer the other one, but, you know. You know what I'm saying? You never get quite to, because there's so much more there. You know, you have that, but you know, you don't feel the wind. You don't, you know, the big broad, because it's just how, where they're pointing the camera, you see something. But it's everything, your full peripheral vision, all the sounds, all the smells, the air smells different up there. The whole, all that, you know, the coldness of it. You don't get any of that from the picture. You understand? So much of the experiences are missing. So that's the whole point. The material world, it only has the forms, but it doesn't actually have the real substance of what it is, because it's limited by time and space.
Even you leave the fridge open and turn the fan on, have blue light or extra sky, still
no, it's not going to happen, no. But if you sat next to the fridge, it would be easier for getting your drinks, so you know. Like that, right?
Maybe. Yeah, those guys are going 120 miles an hour, but you know, I've got a cold, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's whatever your priorities are, it's your values. But in other words, you know, the example has its limitation. Okay, let's try using this one. Okay, you have the tree on the bank, and you have the tree in the water. Right? So now the tree in the water, it has fruits and flowers, but you can't go up and smell them. You know, you can't touch them. You can't get the softness of the flower, or its fragrance, or the subtleties, or actually even the full color is not there in the reflection. You know what I'm saying? The more still the water, the better the reflection. That's why it's recommended goodness, because goodness is it's basically there. Passion, it's a little bit, so you can still kind of tell the tree, but it's too active. But good ignorance is just as too much. You can't really tell it's a tree anymore. Does that make sense? Yeah. That worked better. Too many distractions in the other.
I was actually wondering if you had jumped. Such a bright description.
No. It's just you could just all these things have to be there. No. Why, you have it?
No.
No, okay. No.
I have friends who have it.
You said have or had?
I had.
Had, yeah, I
no,
had
he's
friends.
Still alive, but
oh, okay, I have friends, but you know, it's like. Yeah, so like mountain climbing and you know, skiing. Yeah, I had friends. You know,
still up there.
Still the great, you know, parachute in the sky. Yeah. No, we were taking across from cars. you get the race cars, and you see they put a little bit, and you get a little something to go, but you don't get the smell. There's a smell of this, because they have special rubber. The rubber is always burning on the pavement, you know, and then they use a special petrol. You know, it's like it's meant for airplanes and stuff. You know, so the smell of that and the rubber is something you get at the track that you'll never get on the television. So we're just converting the two. over from there. That's the point, is if you have one area that you can function at, you can convert it into other things. You know, that's why it said, if you study something very, like you learn one thing very nicely, then you learn it all the details and all this connection back to the Supreme. Then you could transfer that across to something else. The principles, not the details. You know what I'm saying? That's the idea. That's the idea of the Chaitanya Upanayan, the Anuchana, is that something is studied in depth. So the study in depth is the philosophy, you know, as it is at present, right? But then you'll be able to transfer that across, that's philosophical points, across into any of the other subjects. Does that make sense? So there's nothing you can't deal with, any subject that you can't relate it to the philosophy. That makes sense.
The other day you mentioned something about
a little loudly.
The other day you mentioned something about one subject we must be master, one expert, and one just know. Is that the idea? That something you really studied?
Yeah. I mean, it's because if there's mastery of anything, because that means then you can apply, understand another subject, the principles of it. The detail means you have to practice it and have the skill. Does that make sense? But still, you don't know Ayurveda, but you understand the philosophy and everything and its principles, so you can actually teach an Ayurvedic doctor about its connection with the Lord and actually why the things work the way they do. Because they don't think about it. You know what I'm saying? Some do. Most are mucus, bile, and air. They don't connect it to goodness, passion, ignorance. And so then they don't get that. I mean, I've even seen ones they've reversed it now. You know, like that. Is that they can't, they put, give the, I think good mucus and bile, they reverse what the qualities are. Somehow or another, they're still able to make the system work because they just know this makes that, and so then that makes this disease. But somehow or another, they don't even understand how these things work. You know what I'm saying? So they can't understand the philosophy. And if you understand the philosophy and the culture, then you know how to apply it. You know what I'm saying? That's the problem. You have these modern, like Ayurvedic diets and stuff, and they give recipes and menus and stuff like that. But it's like, what do you do with barley? So they're taking barley and putting it into your diet in a way that you wouldn't necessarily use it. You know what I'm saying? So they're bringing all these things there, so they're creating this artificial diet. I mean, it's not that the ingredients aren't good, but it's not a menu that anybody in the world uses. You know what I'm saying? So that's why the culture is necessary, so that you know how to do it. Otherwise, the science has been applied into the food, but it hasn't been applied into the culture. And so it comes out kind of this sterile kind of thing. You understand? So that's the problem. When you're dealing with this kind of like new agey things, it's sterile. You know, that's the common point amongst all those that are really into the new age, is there's a certain social sterility that's there. You know? And only if there's something left from some other thing, you know, then it works. You know, they go to Odin's Nacht or something like that, but that's left over from the Norsemen, you know. Does that make sense? Or, you know, they go to Stonehenge or something, but that's left over from them, but it's not from the New Age thing itself. The New Age thing itself is very dry. Because what's the culture? You know what I'm saying?
Hugging.
Huh?
Hugging.
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 That's hugging.
Name. Because there's no taste, so it's just like, oh yeah.
Hug.
And the taste is organic.
Hmm?
The taste is organic.
Yeah, but you only taste the organic if you put some salt. I mean, after a while, you do get used to it. So
yeah.
I guess, you know, it's like cows don't eat with any salt, and they kind of get some taste. So.
And they eat grass.
Hmm?
They eat grass without salt.
Yeah, but if you give a cow salt, it's really happy. Very happy.
Okay. They also they also become happy for you.
Yeah. Okay, two major ingredients of bhakti according to Madhva. Two. One, a profound awareness of the Lord's majesty, mahatmya, jnana, and an inborn magnetic attraction to the Lord, sneha. Right? So, this profound awareness of the Lord's majesty is, that's the basis of the environment of the Vaikuntha rasa. Right? Because if that majesty is not there, what is the rasa? What's the taste? Right? Because it's not Vrindavan, where it's that intimacy of the sweetness, or, you know, is that what I'm saying? So the majesty becomes the problem. Inborn magnetic attraction, so that natural, spontaneous attraction to the Lord. Right, but it's not the prominence, right? That sneha is there, but it's expressed through that profound awareness. So that's why we don't call it spontaneous. But even they'll talk about the spontaneous element, but it's not the prominence. It's just a side thing.
You mentioned that you know, spiritual prema is happiness. That what he's talking about, but it's in that.
Yes. Yeah. Prema is the common. The common position of all jivas in the spiritual world. Now, it's just the how they express that. So basically, you'll have expression through rules and expression without rules. It doesn't mean that the form of the culture isn't the same. It's just that the rules aren't necessary to express it. Right? In other words, it's not the rule that you're expressing it through. You're expressing it, and you happen to be using the rule. It's a difference. Is that what you're saying? You know, it's like the boy goes, he goes down, you know, he's got a break at lunch, you know, like that. He goes down to the florist, you know, he orders, you know his dozen long stem roses and all that. He comes back after work, picks it up, he goes there, you know, rings the doorbell, this, that. It's all very formal. Like that. Does that make sense? But it's still, he's using flowers, you know, or the boy and girl are out in the field and like this and that, and they see some nice flowers, he just picks one and gives it to her. You understand? So it's you're still using flowers, but one is just naturally coming, and the other one, it's very properly done, because that's the proper medium. Does that make sense? So the point is flowers are common. You know, they still feed the Lord of Vaikuntha. They dress the Lord. They bathe the Lord of Vaikuntha. You know, they do. They sing for him. They dance for him. But it's done in that formal way of expression. So they're very comfortable with that. They prefer that. Right? Does that make sense? So Vaikuntha is one end. Vrindavan's the other end. And Dwarka's in the middle. It's the start of Vaikuntha. Right? But it's much more relaxed than it is in Vaikuntha. Because you have all the rasas are there. Because the other one is, the majesty is so great, it only leaves servitorship. There is no other rasa there.
He doesn't have children in Vaikuntha?
No. Hello? That's only in Dwarka.
And he himself, he's satisfied in that position? Or he comes there to please those devotees
who... Yeah, he pleases those devotees, so he's satisfied in that, but he's the most satisfied. In other words, Vaikuntha is perfect.
So,
right? But, you know, but Vrindavan's the most perfect.
Can we say that when he's getting bored in Vaikuntha, he goes to Vrindavan, to Dwarka?
No, but because he's always in Vrindavan. He never leaves Vrindavan. So it's only that expanded mood leaves Vrindavan. Like that. Does that make sense? He expands his Balaram. So he Krishna and Balaram are there. It's Balaram who actually leaves.
No, I took it not from Vrindavan. I took it from Vaikuntha. It's not the right start to take.
No, you start from the other way. You know, but we'll see. Gopu Kumara, so he goes there and he plays his flute for the Lord. Like that. You know, so, you know, kind of everybody's standing around there, kind of smiling. Okay, cool. Like that. And then afterwards, they kind of take him aside. So, you know, one group of devotees is saying, you can't do that, you have to speak nice, you have to be formal, you have to stand there, you have to offer your prayers, you have to do that. And the more mature ones are saying, no, it's okay, that's how he's doing, you know, the Lord's happy and all that. But whatever it is, they have this whole discussion, then they leave, and then he's just sitting there. And then Vishnu himself shows up, you know, forearms and everything like that. And when everybody's gone, then he pulls out his flute and they start playing and having a good time and all things like that, you know. Because it is Krishna, it's just Krishna who's there, you know, so he's still there. You know, but then after that is pointed out that, you know, this is not for you, so. Yes.
It's interesting, in the same story, and when Gokumar goes to Vrindavan, then Narada tells him that you should go to that place which is very far from Vaikuntha. It means Golok is very far, although Dwaraka is near.
Mm-hmm.
But because the mood is so different, then it's considered a very far place.
Yeah. 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 Because it's moods that make the difference. It's not the location. Because in any location, you're going to have so many moods. You know, so it's like two people standing next to each other and say, "So you're friends?" "No, we're very different." You know, does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, or you have somebody who's a good friend and you can be quite far away, but you still feel close. You know, so that's the element. It's not. It's mood is what makes the difference. We generally take it by location as difference. But it's actually mood that makes the difference.
Yeah, but it's nice when location matches the mood.
Of course, that's there.
That's the best.
Yeah. Hmm?
The location and the ratio, it's like many examples that come from this.
Yeah, yeah. No, I also had that, but I thought I'll drop those.
Yeah.
Because then I understood. This is what it means, what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is talking about, is that your previous samskar, then everything comes up. Do you understand? Because if you see a situation, you can get so many things from it, but because of the previous samskar, you pull those ones, those options. Right? That's why you want to change the samskars now. So in the future you have better samskars to pull from.
Yeah.
Like that.
Mary? So, to the point. And in the devotee society, we have moods according to the gunas, actually.
According to the gunas?
Yeah. Can we
that, say that? That means it's affected by the gunas.
Because when it's said that we should cooperate together, it's in the service. But yes, you always find somebody who is more similar to you personally in the mood, when their aspiration is the same, but
right,
you know, the mood is so different. So what's the point, what's the basis of association except for service? You can be more...
No, but you have two aspects of just the general service that you're rendering, so that there's a cooperation, the mission is moving forward. And at the same time, as we're moving forward in becoming purified, increasing our understanding and our attachment to Krishna. But at the same time, as who we associate with closely, then that will be those who have a similar mood. Because then, you can only be relaxed if you don't have to worry about everything. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like, let's say you take someone who's extremely formal. Their house is like impeccable. Everything is perfect. It's all high-grade things. Now, someone who's not from that kind of background will feel uncomfortable because you can't touch anything, you can't move, you can't do it. It's something you might do wrong. But someone who's from that background would be very comfortable because now they know they can sit on the couch and, you know, they know that they're sitting on a couch, not on, you know, old piece of pizza or, you know, baby barf or, you know, something like that. You know, they know it's going to be paka, you know. You know what I'm saying? But in someone else's house, it's more relaxed. You know, it's just, you know, yeah, have a seat. Oh, yeah, just move the pizza box, you know, stuff like that. You know, there's, you know, it's like... You know, make yourself at home. It's kind of like, how do you make yourself at home? It's just like everything else has already made itself at home. You know, so they're not going to be at home. So therefore, intimacy is where you have common nature so that you can relax, or at least relaxed enough that you can call that recreation. You know, that
less anxious.
Huh?
Make yourself less anxious.
Yeah, like that. Does that make sense?
So it's social then.
Yeah. It's just like, the guys, you know, how you say, you know, get the, not sure how to put it, because I mean, you still go by the samskaras, right? Like that, you know. So the two guys, you know, they, you know, the grizzly guys and all that, they get off their Harleys, you know, they go into the guy's house, the screen door is still not, you know, quite fixed and all that, because if it was fixed, there's something wrong with them, right? They go in the house and all that, you know, one goes and sits down at the couch and that, and gets the remote, you know, turns on something, you know, like UFC or something like that. And, you know, and the other one says, hey, you know, I'll go get the drinks, right? And so he goes to the refrigerator, you know, funky old refrigerator, opens the door, but it's all full of, like, you know, crystal champagne. What does he do? It's like, what do you do with this stuff? You know, you just want to drink. You just want to take the top off and that. You don't have to do this, that, get out. You know, it's just, you know, you understand? So it's just, it's got to match. Yeah, you know, or you go to this high class place like that, everything's perfect and that, and you look in the, and you open the fridge and you're looking for, you know, the thing is there, this, you know, you call it sterling silver, you know, thing is there with the ice and all that, and then you look inside and there's a bottle of Budweiser beer. You understand? It's kind of like, what's going on here? You know, so that's the thing, is it's you have to have the common nature. So then it works. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, the other day you were saying that the common nature is the Madhyama platform, so then you can work on that.
That's the ideal. But still within that, it'll be, you know, what kind of situation, you know, by your conditioning you'd be more comfortable with. So you have to balance that devotional mood with whatever is their conditioned mood. But of the two, the devotional mood is more important. Yeah. If you're one who, everything you get, you read the ingredients and everything like that, not that you don't before you buy it, but, you know, even if you go to another devotee's house, why are you reading the ingredients, right? So you want to make sure there's no, you know, eggs or, you know, old grandmothers or anything inside, right? Like that. But then, you know, someone comes over to the house and everything in your house, they're picking up, looking at the ingredients. Oh, this has got sugar in it. You got sugar. You're trying to kill everybody. You let your child eat this stuff. You know, it's kind of like, don't invite those people over. But if that's what you do in your house, then definitely invite people like that over. They'll be impressed. Wow, nothing has sugar in it. Where do you buy this stuff? You know, like that. You know what I'm saying? So the thing is you have to match nature. Otherwise, you can't relax. There's nothing you can do. Any move you make, it's wrong. Anything you go to eat, it's wrong. Anytime you try to do something, it's wrong. It's got to be that there's common nature that you can do. That's the thing. That's there. Those persons you can be close with. Right, on a social platform. On a spiritual platform, then who has a common spiritual kind of mentality? So that will be more broad. That's basically any devotee. But then even then, you have to sometimes be careful how far you discuss things. Does that make sense?
Okay. So how far we discuss the details seems to be very important, right?
Yeah, it's just, you know, it means the principle is always common. But the detail is where you'll get the differences. Like the principle in the spiritual world is everybody serving Vishnu. But the detail is what particular flavor or medium that they're doing that through. Okay. That's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that in the spiritual world there's only one opinion. But in the material world then there's so many opinions. Like that. Because in the spiritual world, Vishnu is the center of everything. So there's only one opinion. In the spiritual world, you only have Vaishnavas. Right? Then it's detail of which, what aspect. Because there's 24 Vaikuntha planets for the 24 Vishnus. Right? So that means there's a slight different flavor in each one of them. So one prefers to be on Keshava's planet, another one on Narayana's, another one on Madhava's, another one on Govinda's, another one on Vishnu's, and like that. Is that what I'm saying? There's a slight flavor difference, but it's still that majesty and everything like that. You know, everyone's got four arms. Does that make sense? I mean, think of it like this. you have two arms, and your cousin comes over, you know, like that for a sleepover. He's got four arms. Yeah, it's not going to be fun wrestling or having a pillow fight. You know? It's just he's going to win every time. You know? So you got to keep the same amount of arms. Must be wild. Maybe that's the thing. They would have really wild pillow fights, but at the same time, everything is so formal and all that. So then, yeah, it balances out. Yeah, yeah, it would be dangerous. Four-arm pillow fights. You know?
They have soft pillows.
That's true. They got softer pillows, right?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Shri Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jainatai Gaurav. That's interesting. That goes along with pillow fight. The conclusion is they have softer pillows in Vaikuntha, and then the class ends. Right? You listen. What's going on?
New book for the GBC to talk about. Not which salt from Vaikuntha was the first one, or the second one. They have softer pillows in Vaikuntha.
In Vaikuntha, the pillows are soft. Oh.